Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by GVome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. GVome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique GVome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. Welcome, everyone. Today's episode is going to be a really good one. We're talking to an integrative gastroenterologist. I'll bet you a lot of you haven't heard of integrative gastroenterologists, but we found one of these rare gems out there. Dr. Marvin Singh is joining us. And welcome to the podcast, Marvin. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, me too. But before I do that, I do have to slightly just, I mean, you have so many things in your credential. I'm excited to just talk about all the stuff you've done. First of all, you've gone to school for a long time. That makes two of us, I think.
I think I'm still in school. It's like we never stop, huh?
I love it. Constantly learning, right? So, but just to give a flavor about Dr. Singh, he is gone through allopathic medical training, received his MD degree, did internal medicine residency, and then 3 years on top of that to do gastroenterology and hepatology fellowship. So a lot of really specialized training. And then he went through the integrative medicine fellowship program at the University of Arizona for integrative medicine. And he is one of the first physicians, if not the first physician in California, to be board certified in internal medicine, gastroenterology, and also a diplomat of the American Board of Integrative Medicine. So you really have put your money where your mouth needs to be, especially when we're thinking about how can we really start moving the needle in terms of integrative medicine. And also, you've taken on the directorship of integrative gastroenterology at the Susan Samuel I Integrative Health Institute at UC Irvine. So Marvin, tell us, what is an integrative gastroenterologist and what do you do?
Well, thank you for that introduction first. An integrative gastroenterologist is really, you know, all these labels for integrative medicine, functional medicine, alternative medicine, complementary medicine, we call it many different things. But what it really is using extra skill sets to help the same type of patient. So it's not like we're doing anything unusual or different. It's just I have more tools in my toolbox so that I can help people out. And Andrew Weil, on the first day of the fellowship, made it a point to kind of talk to everybody about this and said that this is not integrative medicine or alternative medicine. We don't really care for those terms too much, but what it really is good medicine. And if that means that I have to, you know, talk about mind-body issues, nutrition, toxin exposures, exercise, you know, and offer some natural treatments for a common medical condition, then you can call it integrative medicine, but we call it good medicine.
Yeah, well, that's pretty funny because that really is what it is, right? It's about bringing in much more perspectives. And I think a lot of people have heard about GI doctors. Maybe some people haven't. But can you give us an overview of what is a GI doctor like you focus on generally? And then where do you take that to the next level as an integrative GI doctor?
Yeah, so a GI doctor is a gastroenterologist. So we're the guys who specialized in digestive health. So the digestive tract starts from the mouth and goes all the way through the end of the colon and, you know, includes the gallbladder and pancreas and liver as well. And so we go through a regular residency in internal medicine and then specialize in the digestive tract. So we do colonoscopies, endoscopies, and all those kind of things. And how I use integrative medicine in my gastroenterology practice is instead of just focusing on, you know, what's your symptom, what's your treatment, what's your symptom, what's your treatment, you know, I try to look and see what are your symptoms, where could they be coming from, what are some of the underlying causes that could be driving you to have these symptoms, do we need to do any investigation to make sure there's nothing major going on, if not, what are the ways that we can approach this, does this mean that we look at your diet, does this mean that we can give you, you know, a natural treatment. Usually, you know, natural treatments would be preferred to pharmaceutical treatments. Because, for example, like in heartburn, you could take very nice proton pump inhibitors that will help stop your heartburn. But these medications may also have side effects or downstream, you know, sequelae or issues that can happen from taking that. So we want to try to avoid those. It doesn't make much sense to give you a treatment that could potentially cause several other issues down the road later on. We want to give a treatment that works well, is effective, makes you feel better, but doesn't give you that risk. And so that's what integrative medicine and integrative gastroenterology is. It's using the basic principles of being a doctor. You don't forget that you're practicing medicine. Do the right things diagnostically if you need to. And then, you know, try to look at the whole person and the whole body when making an assessment and try to really think outside the box for how to help people with their symptoms. Doesn't always have to be a pharmaceutical as a response.
No, I love that overview and thanks for taking us through that. So what would be your approach then to define gut health? And because a lot of folks now are talking about gut health, whether it's in the medicine circles or you see this in the supplement circles or amongst a lot of alternative medical practitioners, what does gut health mean to you and how do you approach your conversations around gut health?
Gut health to me means microbiome health, because that's ultimately what we're talking about. So the gut is really the digestive tract, you know, but inside of the gut is a whole ecosystem of different kinds of microbes, whether they be bacteria, which is primary majority, but there's also viruses and fungi, and all these microbes live together in our digestive tract or our gut. And so when we talk about gut health, we're really talking about how's the microbiome behaving? You know, what the spread of the different microbes are? Are they good? Are they mostly bad? What are their activity levels? Are they producing short-chain fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory, which are going to be good for you? Or are they producing things that are going to cause you to have symptoms? As a result of these issues with the microbiome, we may experience a variety of different kinds of GI or systemic symptoms as a result. So that's what they mean when they say all disease begins in the gut. So you may have rheumatoid arthritis and you may not think that your periodic constipation or bloating really has anything to do with that, but they could all be coming from the same place.
Yeah, I think this is a really salient point because a lot of other perspectives look at the gut as a central portion of health. I mean, whether it be Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, naturopathy. Can you talk a little bit more about what goes on at the gut? You have the microbiome. Talk a little bit about how the immune system might be in interplay at that interface as well.
Yeah, it's a great question. 70-80% of the immune system is actually located in the gut. So that's why we often talk about our immune system when we refer to the microbiome, because the microbes are really at the seat of the immune system. They help control and modulate inflammation, which is really where a lot of immune dysfunction may come from. And there's this concept called leaky gut or intestinal permeability that some people may have heard of. And this basically refers to the gut having a very thin single layer of cells as their barrier. And these cells are connected to each other by, you can think of them as like little barbells. They're like tight junctions, which are protein complexes. And when there is damage to these little barbells that connect the cells together, then there is the ability for toxins and things that shouldn't be present in the systemic circulation or in the blood system to get out of the gut and into the systemic system. And as a result, it can create an immune response and inflammation. So this may be where food sensitivities come from and a variety of other chronic conditions, because you're taking the dysfunction in the gut, and that is the cause or contributing factor to the systemic problem you might have.
Yeah, thanks for going through leaky gut. And there's been a lot of conversation around this mucin layer throughout the small intestine and large intestine. I guess there's this layer of mucin that typically protects and is a protective layer right adjacent to that layer of cells you're talking about.
Right.
How does that shift? And can you take us through that? I mean, what is the science behind the mucin layer?
Well, there are, you know, the microbes help keep this intact as well. There are mucin producing microbes and microbes that live inside of this mucus layer as well. And so this is a barrier of protection. And when a wide variety of these things occur, like we were talking about, like you're eating the wrong foods, or you're eating, you know, or you're exposed to toxins, or even if there's stress in your life, all of these things contribute to imbalance in the microbiome, which could result in shifts and changes in the protective layers of the gut, which is why we look at, you know, where some of these symptoms and conditions are coming from. These are the things we want to address, because there's not going to be a test that you could run that says, okay, Raja, let's do a test to see whether your stress is causing the mucus layer in your gut to be degraded.
Yeah, no, thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, no, I mean, but we do know there is a really great literature supporting all of these elements of lifestyle medicine as being contributory to good microbiome health. We know that, you know, simple things like exercise, proper nutrition with plenty of vegetables and fruits, stress reduction, sleeping the right amount, avoiding toxins. We know all of those things actually contribute to a more diverse and resilient microbiome and gut barrier. So these are the things that we want to continue to do. And believe it or not, there's information supporting that social interconnectedness, how you interact with others, can impact the gut microbiome as well. So part of my recommendations is always to ask people about what they do for fun, because it does actually play a role. The body seems very complicated, but at the end of the day, there are some very simple things that it responds very nicely to.
Right? Eat well, sleep well, and live well.
It's not rocket science, right?
At the end of it all, yeah. So going back to what you're talking about with gut health, I think a lot of people, and myself included, I've also struggled with this, which is IBS, also known as irritable bowel syndrome. You know, if you don't mind just giving a lay of the land around what IBS is, because this is really a notoriously difficult thing to treat, I've found, from the conventional approach. And sometimes it's hard to even put a finger on it, but can you give us an idea of how do you define IBS, and what is the approach that you might take that would be different than, say, another doc that doesn't have an integrative perspective?
Yeah, I mean, IBS has actually very nicely outlined criteria. You know, it's called the Rome criteria that gastroenterologists follow to make a diagnosis. You know, you got to think, what is it really that we're talking about? Yeah, we could be talking about abdominal discomfort, constipation or diarrhea, bloating, and things like that in the setting of a normal colonoscopy, meaning that there's no tumor or Crohn's or colitis going on that's actually causing the symptoms. It's kind of a clinical diagnosis, a diagnosis of exclusion after you've ruled out any major things going on. So what causes this? You know, why do people have this issue? Why is it so common? And most likely it's related to imbalances in the microbiome. And conventional medicine really doesn't, I mean, I think we're starting to come around, but I think we're not really taught to think about that first. Where could this imbalance be coming from that could be driving this person's symptoms? We think, okay, well, they have this symptom, we can give them this medication. Let's try this medication to stop the symptom. It's a symptom response-based treatment. And it helps a lot of people because you're helping to control their symptoms, but are we really helping them? Like, you know what I mean? That's what I try to keep in mind. If we're not really addressing the root cause of the dysfunction, then we're just masking it. And one day, you know, continual masking may lead to something else in the future. So really taking a look at, first thing I do is to actually talk to the person. What's going on in your life? What kind of foods are you eating? You know, what are the habits that you have that you know are bad, but you do them anyways because you find enjoyment in them? What are the points of stress, and how are you reducing stress? Are you exercising enough? Are you sleeping enough? You know, we look at all of these kind of elements of lifestyle medicine, and we also, you know, may do some tests to look and see what are the dysfunctions in the microbiome, what's actually going on. Do you have leaky gut? Do you have food sensitivities? And then we can try to, you know, create a personalized program for them to help address the symptoms. And that's what we do in my clinic, Precision Clinic.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk about, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about your clinic, because I want to talk about how people can find you. Now, talking about IBS, I have to say, just personally, I love what you just mentioned, because I struggled with IBS through all of my teen years up until I went to college and my diet shifted. And you know what, Marvin? I shifted the foods I was eating, the kind of spices I was eating, and my IDS has never come back in the last 20 years. I just don't have any issues with it anymore, just by changing diet. And prior to that, I was thinking, gosh, what pharmaceuticals might I need or whatnot? And I literally have no symptoms now, because now I'm just mindful of how I eat and what I eat and, you know, when I eat as well.
Yeah. And in your case, there may have been particular spices or foods that were contributory to your symptoms, because the microbes in your gut maybe didn't care for them, or maybe they fermented those products too much and you had some, you know, gut symptoms as a side effect. The issue for you is not necessarily going to be the same issue for somebody else, which is actually the very interesting part of IBS or any, you know, chronic issue, because each of our microbiomes is only 10 to 20% similar. So while many people may have similar types of symptoms, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's coming from the same place or that the treatment is the same. The avoiding the certain foods and spices might have been the trick for you, but meditating might have actually been the trick for somebody else. Two totally different things treating the same problem. And it's actually interesting. They have literature from last year, I believe, an article looking at low FODMAP diet, which is, you know, one of the main eating styles. People have IBS, and they compared it to acupuncture, right? Two totally different kinds of treatments. One's nutritional and one is kind of a mind-body type thing. And they both helped just as good.
Well, there you go. You know, I think your point is a really salient point in that we can't just take one person's experience and then apply it to everybody else. I guess that's the whole point, is that we all have our individual paths of how to get where we need to go. And on that note, a lot of us look at genetics as being our destiny, but I feel like now the conversation has shifted, and it's not that if you have genes that predispose you to, you know, say a certain condition or maybe a certain sort of inflammatory response, we can control that with the epigenetics, isn't it? Like how we eat and what we do, is that how the actions and lifestyle choices we make ties into our cellular functions?
Yeah, I mean, we got to remember that our genes are not our destiny. I mean, that's almost cliche for me to say, because people have been saying that for a while now, but it's true. I mean, our genes are not our destiny. Our genes are the blueprint for our DNA, right? For what we can produce, but there are epigenetic switches that can turn genes on or off. So if you look in, this is how I really got fascinated by this field, because when I look at the literature for how you can impact your gene expression so that you have a positive outcome, and you look at how you can impact your gut microbiome so you have a positive outcome, they're the exact same things. The exact same things. These are the same in common principles.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, Marvin, I wanted to also have you talk to us about, what do people do right now that is negative for their gut health, just in general? And obviously, each person is going to have their individual factors. But in general, what are some things that people are doing that are detrimental? And then can you give us some tips on how we might be able to help our gut health get more healthy?
I think probably, you know, one of the main things we do in America is our diet and our bad habits with regards to eating. We're always on the go, our society, you know, we tend to eat out a fair amount. And when we eat out, we don't really have control over what we're eating or where we're eating a lot of the times. There are healthy choices in a lot of the restaurants, but you know, a lot of people end up going for fast food or eating at their favorite restaurant, which may not necessarily be using the highest quality product. And I think this is where, you know, a lot of the problems start. So if you had to do one thing, you know, it would be, you know, maybe take a look at what kind of foods you're eating, what kind of food quality you're eating. Is it organic, non-GMO, or are you eating a lot of packaged processed foods with a lot of, you know, sugar content? And getting in the habit of reading the labels on the foods is really, really helpful. That's something that people should really get in the habit of.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what we eat is obviously going to impact quite a bit. And then secondly, are there any sort of foods that, you know, particular foods that we're eating that are detrimental? I mean, one of the things, and I'll be more specific, there's been conversation around alcohol. Is there way to be moderate about the alcohol that you drink, or is it all bad in the sense of any alcohol intake?
Well, I mean, I think each person is a case-by-case basis. Obviously, if somebody has an alcohol problem, we wouldn't be encouraging them to drink alcohol. Or if we know that they have issues with their liver or that their microbiome is really imbalanced, sometimes I will tell people to just kind of cool it on the drinking for a few months while we try to rebalance the microbiome. But in general, I mean, if you're otherwise healthy and don't have any, you know, issues that would be against it, it's probably okay to have a little bit of alcohol. But you got to remember the concept that I always tell people about, which I got from my mentor, Jerry Mullen, is that in one of his books, he says, the dose makes the poison. And that's a saying that I really like, and I often repeat it to patients, because the dose does make the poison. You may be able to have one drink or one to two drinks, one drink as a female, one to two drinks as a male. But if you start going over those limits, then something which may not have caused as much of a problem may actually cause more of a problem. And if you do that regularly and chronically, then you're continually causing that problem to perpetuate. So this is what we mean when we say the dose makes the poison. So maybe, okay, yeah, have a drink if you're going for a social event, have a drink or two, but it's when you start overdoing it that you develop a problem. It's just like saying, oh, we have a little bit of a rainstorm today, it'll be okay, versus we have a category 5 hurricane coming. You've got to remember that 5-6 drinks of alcohol a couple times a week is like a hurricane to your microbiome, these little microbes in there. So you're just continually bombarding them. And if we do that, and then you, because what often happens when you drink is that other bad habits go along too, right? So maybe you'll have that dessert that you probably wouldn't have had, or maybe you'll have a double serving of lasagna when you know you shouldn't be eating carbs in the first place. So these kind of things happen, and then it's like a double, triple whammy. Then you don't sleep well, so another thing happens. You're underhydrated, so another thing happens. And then you have a headache, so you take Advil or something like that, and that actually causes a leaky gut, so another thing happens. So you can see how one event can actually lead to you actually doing multiple different things. And then in combination, you develop this problem. And this is why it's sometimes hard to figure out, why do I have this problem? It's because it's not just one thing. It's not simple like that. There's usually a lot of different things that are going on that are contributing.
No, thanks for taking us through that as well, because I think you just putting a nice perspective on this is good, because things do domino effect and can snowball. Sounds like the best thing is moderation.
That's the key to the body, right? Everything in moderation. It sounds so cliche, but this is how we're built, you know?
You made a really good point. Dose makes the poison. Mm-hmm. So, the other aspect of gut health I think a lot of us think about is colon cancer. And I know you probably see quite a bit of folks to just do screenings and colonoscopies. And, you know, we have countries where we don't eat as much red meat, where we don't have as much colon cancer rates. And then other countries where you have high colon cancer rates. Can you talk a little bit about why do certain countries have higher colon cancer rates? And what are some things that we can do now that would help reduce this epidemic in, you know, certain countries? There's quite a bit of it. So what is your approach to be preventative?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think there's also a lot of different reasons why one person or another, or one population or another, might have a higher risk for colon cancer. There are genetic patterns and associations that we see. There's probably microbiome involvement, and it just could be related to lifestyle and quality of food and quality of lifestyle in variety of places compared to, you know, our country. What we are seeing that is more troubling these days is that younger and younger people are being diagnosed with colon cancer. I actually asked a friend, colleague of mine last year, he's a surgeon, and I asked him, what's the youngest patient you've operated on for colon cancer? And he said 19. Can you believe that? So he said they went in thinking that this patient had appendicitis. And when he went in, it wasn't appendicitis, it was a perforated tumor.
Oh my.
So, you know, so then you go and look and say, well, why is that happening? This is very troubling that younger people are more and more being diagnosed with colon cancer, and they're more aggressive actually, you know, at the younger age. Then you look and see that, you know, there is literature showing that your microbiome does change, and you do see benefits if you change your diet later in life. So like if me and you say, oh, we're going to change our diet, we're unhealthy, I want to make a change now, that's great. You know, it's good that you do that. But what is most influential on your risk for things like this is your diet as an adolescent, the adolescent diet. There's actually a study showing that risk for colon cancer is associated not as much with the adult diet, but more as the adolescent diet. So it's very important for us to really look and see what our kids are eating from a very young age, because they're developing their microbiome, especially in the very, very early days, the first 1,000 days of life. The microbiome is really kind of trying to find its way. And if we allow them to drink a lot of sodas and candy with food dyes and things like that, that we may not be cultivating the healthiest of microbiomes. And the other thing that is very interesting several months ago that came out was that in younger people, they saw in this one study, they were looking at the microbiomes of people who were diagnosed with colon cancer. And they found that there was a predominance of a microbe called Fusobacterium nucleatum. And these tumors, I mean, these microbes seem to help perpetuate the growth of the tumors and help that microenvironment there where the tumor is be prosperous so that you could actually make a tumor. And guess where this microbe comes from? Does not come from the gut. It's actually an oral microbe. Huh. Comes from your mouth. So that also raises the concern over oral hygiene, which right. also goes hand in hand with the types of foods that you're eating too, because if you're eating a lot of sugars and things like that, your mouth is not, your teeth don't like that. We know the dentist always says, don't eat candies and sugars, right? And then you're swallowing those microbes because you're creating a bad environment in the mouth. How many times a day do you swallow? You know, I mean, you're swallowing your spit all the time, constantly. So these microbes get down, you take a little bit of an antacid for the heartburn because you went and had a big Coca-Cola with your Five Guys burger, and now you suppress the acid in the stomach, which is a natural thing, and that barrier of protection is gone, and now maybe more like a free pass to microbes who want to get down further. So you can see how something so complex as colon cancer in a teenager could actually come from something so simple as diet and proper nutrition at an earlier age.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show preventive medicine has to start early and start with their kids. So thanks for taking us through that. And it does raise the question, especially when you start talking about these studies where there's finding correlations with certain bacteria. What is your view on gut microbiome testing? Where are we today? Are we at a point where we can make reasonable guesses or reasonable conclusions from the testing? And is the testing accurate, especially because we're just looking at the colonic area? But, you know, please comment on what you think and how do you use gut testing?
Yeah, I think it's a rapidly evolving field. I mean, I think a decade ago, if we said people would be able to buy these kits online themselves, even we'd say, you're crazy. What are you talking about? But the technology to actually do this has become better and faster. And I think what a lot of different companies who do this are struggling with is how to present the information, what's going to be actionable for people. And so what I have come to kind of understand over the last several years is that, you know, initially when I started getting into this field, I was also obsessed with each individual microbe. Oh, they have this microbe, they have that microbe. It's like, but it's impossible really to look up every microbe. I mean, I guess it's not impossible, but you know, it's challenging to, you know, evaluate each individual microbe and then guess what the issue is that you need to make an action on to make a change. What we have come now to kind of talk about is that it's not as important who exactly is there. It's good to note them, especially if there are ones that are more problematic than others. But what's most important is what's going on in the ecosystem itself. What is the microbiome's behavior? Is it wanting to make good things or bad things? Is it working for your digestion or against your digestion? What are the activities of the microbiome? And so this is what I'm looking at more, because if I can understand if this is a pro-inflammatory state, then that's something that I can deal with, right? We can try to make recommendations to turn that inflammation down. Right. And so I believe that we are moving in that direction. You brought up a good point in that we're looking at colonic microbiome, where a lot of the microbes live there. Actually, when you do a stool test, much of the time you may only be sequencing your rectal microbiome because of the nature of the way of sampling. So some companies are looking into different things of, you know, taking multiple swipes at the stool or maybe even taking a deeper sample, like a core sample of the entire stool, so that you can maybe get a better accurate reflection of what's going on in the entire microbiome, or at least the microbes that stool collected on the way out.
Yeah, this is fascinating, Marvin. I could talk to you for hours, and you know, we won't do that today. We might need to bring you back on for another discussion because I have a bunch of other, I think, interesting topics we could talk about. But nevertheless, really appreciate your expertise and your time today. I think it's fascinating to hear your perspectives on these areas. Do you have any final tips for folks when thinking about GI health or when even considering visiting a gastroenterologist? Any tips for people to find the right one for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, with any doctor, it's nice to look up their background and see, you know, what kinds of things they have expertise in with when you're making a choice. And there's a lot of times the relationship has to be a good working relationship. So if you don't have anything in common or you just don't get along, you're not going to be able to get as much accomplished. So that's something I usually recommend to people when they're looking for doctors. And I guess one of the tips I could leave everybody with is that getting healthy doesn't have to be like a punishment. Sometimes when people go to the doctor and the doctor tells them, you got to do this, this, and this, they look at it as negative because they say, well, the doctor's telling me that I have all these things wrong with me and I have to do all these things as a consequence. So it's like you just got homework and that has a negative connotation.
Like a bunch of chores, right?
Yeah, getting healthy doesn't have to be negative. Getting healthy can be fun and we should make it fun. It's all about your perspective in life. You can say, oh, well, the doctor told me that I need to change my diet. You can say, well, look, you know, this is going to be exciting because I'm going to get to learn how to cook. I'm going to learn about different ingredients. I'm going to learn about the nutritional value of some things that I never ate before. I can teach my kids about this. I can teach my friends about this, my parents about it. So you take a different perspective on it and make it a fun thing because at the end of the day, you want to have fun in your life. You want to be a happy person. And, you know, these are the things that you need to do to optimize your health. So might as well enjoy it along the way.
Fantastic. You're probably a doctor that everybody needs to be seeing more, making all these changes and choices all about fun. That's fantastic, Marvin. So how do people connect with you and tell us what you're doing with your clinic right now?
Yeah, they can connect with me through the website. I'm also on social media. Our website is precisionclinic.com. It's precision with an E. We actually spell it the Italian way. It still means precision, but I liked the Italian spelling of precision because of the O-N-E, because it emphasizes my whole belief in that it's really an individual approach for that one person. You can't apply general principles for populations against one person. You have to look at that one person to give best recommendations. I'm also on social media. Instagram is at Dr. Marvin Singh. And anybody can feel free to reach out. We do a lot of this testing in our practice and put together, you know, very personalized protocols for people based on what their individual needs are and what their background is.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And hopefully this really enlightens people on what an integrative GI can do for you and what gut health can mean to your overall health. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast brought to you by GVome, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at gvome.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.